Welcome to Authors of the Pacific Northwest, where we connect Pacific Northwest authors with new listeners and provide advice for aspiring authors on the business of writing. I'm your host, Vicki J. Carter. Hi there, listeners. Today, I am happy to introduce a new author friend that I have met. Her name is Tricia Harley McCarthy. You'll probably hear me call her Trish because I slip into calling people by their first name. We'll make sure that when you go to show notes, we'll have all of our information there. So say hello to everybody, Trish.
Hello, everybody. I'm excited to be here. Honestly, it's great.
Awesome. Thank you. So tell us, let's start out a little bit about yourself. Tell our listeners first what state you live in. And if you have a day job, explain what that job is, because I think you have a very interesting thing that you do as well as writing. So share those two things with us.
Oh, okay. Well, I live in Independence, Oregon, and I'm a transplant from California. So my husband retired, so we came up here, and I live outside of Salem. And my day job, I actually do some life coaching.
Yes.
I've started doing that again. And, I do a lot of, spiritual work too when I'm doing the life coaching. So I kind of integrate the two together. It's a great blend. And a lot of times, a lot of the spiritual truths I talk about actually find their way in my book.
Oh, that's exciting. See, when I was doing some research on you, I'm like, I wonder if she's going to do a book just about life coaching, you know, things like that, some tips for people, because there's always a market for that.
Right. No, absolutely. I like to do techniques, give people techniques that are easy and quick, because I'm not into the meditation for, you know, 30, 40 minutes, like sitting like a pretzel. That's not my thing. So I think people appreciate that.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, when and if you do some sort of book on that, we'll have you back for it, because I'm sure I'll be
reading. I will. Sure.
Good.
Absolutely.
So why don't you tell us, besides that, a little bit up front, what you want our listeners and your future readers that hear about you on this podcast to know about you?
I'm a kind of a late bloomer as far as an author goes. I started writing when I was about 38, and I didn't really finish my first standalone book until I was in my 40s. So
right on track with you.
Yes. So, you know, it's been a really awesome experience because I really didn't know what I was doing at first. I had to learn everything. So basically how I started out was writing fanfic for Bridget Jones' Diary, which I fell in love with when I first saw the movie, and I loved the character so much, I realized there was fan fiction out there. And so I started writing my own journal about that on post on fanfic. It's still available. It's really, the grammar and everything is probably horrid, but the story is actually pretty darn good.
Yeah.
And I started getting reviews, and I thought from there, well, gee, couldn't I write my own, you know, book? And I ended up doing that. And part of the inspiration through that was Colin Firth, because he's my favorite actor.
So
I kind of loosely based a character on him and a character on me, kind of sort of as a banker / writer wannabe in the book. So it was a great start for me.
How awesome. You know, I've heard that story. I can't tell you how many times from authors, not just here in the Pacific Northwest that I've talked to, but elsewhere where fan fiction really was their catalyst to get started. I think it's awesome. You know, and there's a very famous fiction book that's floating around nowadays that started that way. I think it was
right.
So I love it. That's so great. So tell me, when did you feel like you were really an author? So, you know, where was that moment like for you?
I think, you know, it's kind of a lonely moment because all of a sudden your first book shows up, you know, your author copy shows up in the mail, and you open it, and it's just kind of you and nobody else around, you know, the husband was at work. So I was kind of overwhelmed, I guess. And it was exciting. And I wasn't marketing myself at all at that point. And So it was kind of a surreal event, but I don't think I really started feeling that until this recent series that I started doing, because everything just started blossoming for me.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
So that was just the starting point. Yeah.
We'll talk a little bit more about marketing, because that's one thing I probe a lot of authors about, because you probably have learned about me just a little bit, is I'm an aspiring author. That's why I started the podcast. I haven't quite published yet. I'm in the process of learning about publishing and all of that. And that's why this podcast started, was because there's so much great value in hearing what other people have done. And it is a lonely journey in most cases. And so I was like, I'm not going to do this alone. I'm going to start reaching out. And so thus the podcast. So.
Right. And I think that's great, because I think how I learn is I read a lot by authors of the same genre that I love. And it mm-hmm. just inspires me, and it makes me a better author. And yeah. learning other people's journeys, it's similar or not, or you learn something. I try to learn something new every day. Mm-hmm. So there's always something to learn. Never, mm-hmm. never, you're never at effort. Ever.
No, I agree. So you are published. So tell us what you have published, like the titles, and then we're going to go a little bit after that and talk about what kind of publisher you are, like self, indie, that kind of thing. So share with our listeners your titles, and then we'll go into the actual.
Okay.
Okay.
I've got a total of 7 romance novels. The first one was my only standalone novel, and I say novels because it's around 90,000 words. And so that one is Just As He Is. It was kind of a misnomer on the Bridget Jones scene, where Mark Darcy tells Bridget he likes her just the way she is. So mm-hmm. that's kind of my inspiration. Mm-hmm. And then my second set of books are the Astral Realm series, and those have to do with a fantasy romance, and it kind of revolves around archangels and mortals.
Oh, cool.
And it is. It's very cool. It was so much fun writing those two. And the first one is Written Among the Stars.
Uh-huh.
And the second one is Beneath the Stars. So both of those are, actually, I'm going to start a third one on that series. So that's those next two. And those are both novellas. Okay. And then the next one I wrote was called Dimensions. And that was a kind of a paranormal mm-hmm. slash spiritual kind of journey for a cop that encountered some otherworldly lights, and he doesn't understand and he doesn't know. And he gets involved with this woman who he's making a call with, and they just start down the road together experiencing these really strange events.
Mm-hmm.
And second one I wrote was, believe it or not, was about an Elvis conspiracy theory and a gentleman who was doing research in the field for like 25 years. He knew the material, and if you looked at it, it was fascinating. I mean, it really was amazing, this material that looked like that Elvis didn't really die.
Uh-huh.
So I did Indescribably Blue, which is based on one of Elvis's songs, and kind of did a fiction piece inspired by true events. So that was fascinating to write.
Oh, I love it.
And then followed, yeah, that was a great book. And then followed by my Granite Bay series, which is recent, and I just published two of the first and the second books. The first one is Accidentally in Love, which mm-hmm. I'm going to be reading an excerpt from, and the second is Falling Accidentally in Love.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, and they're based in the Pacific Northwest, because I write where I write about places I live.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Awesome. So are you self-published? Are you with an independent little small publishing house? Or are you traditional, or a hybrid of kind of all of them, or mixed?
I was a mix. The first mm-hmm. The first publisher I went through was Ex Libris for my first standalone novel, Just As He Is. Mm-hmm. And then I realized, oh, you could self-publish. Cool. So I did. And I published through Kindle and CreateSpace. And now Kindle has a print version. So mm-hmm. it was perfect because I knew Kindle very well. So now I've really learned how to upload and get the things published and get out there. And it's amazing how easy it is these days.
I know that's the thing that draws me. I'm definitely leaning towards self-publication. And it draws me, because I think about 10 years ago, I was looking at publishing at the time. It was still rather traditional, except it was more, you could also go with publishing companies that would send you your books, you know, and then you'd have this inventory. And I was like, I'm not really interested in having a bunch of inventory in my house.
Exactly.
So I love the self-publishing process, and I'm learning so much about it. So what I found, one thing, and is that the cover design, when you're a self-publisher and you're going through whatever Amazon or whatever you're doing, you know, you're doing some cover design work yourself. Do you do it yourself? And if so, like, what do you use? What? Because I'm telling you, some of the romance novels are quite steamy covers. And so I'm like, how do they do this? Where do they get their clip art and all that stuff?
Actually, I design all my covers except the very first one. I did go to design school, so that gave me a different element to add to my books. Mm-hmm. And actually, what I do is I come out with my cover first, and that's an inspiration for me for the story. It's, you know, it's kind of like a vision board, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And it just gives you that vision for the storyline. So I've done all of my covers.
Nice. Very nice. Because I know there's some other products and things people can use, and I've been looking at them, but I'm interested. I tend to gravitate towards doing everything myself. So I'm like,
And I think that's smart, because I think you should know how to upload your manual. You know, I've gotten people to help me, but I think you should need to know from soup to nuts exactly what you need to do in order to, if you can have a team of people around you to help you, have a team of people to help me. But at the same time, I want to know how to do everything myself, because if that person is not available, then I can step in and do whatever I need to do for publishing.
Yes, that's true. So I come from a background with my husband in the music industry, which we were music. And so I've been down the roads on the music side of it with, you know, producing music and then, you know, selling it and, you know, everything from merchandising to web design, all the whole everything, agents. We didn't call them agents, you know, they were managers and, you know, contracts and all that kind of stuff. And because of all that, I'm like, I can do this myself kind of a thing.
Yeah.
But speaking of that, a lot of aspiring authors are no matter what, if they're traditional or if they're going self-publishing, they are looking at ideas of possibly, they could be playing with the idea of getting an agent. Agent, do you have an agent? Are you thinking about that? And if so, kind of walk us through that process. If not, that's okay. But I like to ask authors about that, because it seems to be a question I get from other people all the time.
That's an interesting question. No, I don't have an agent. I do pretty much all my marketing and, you know, all myself, except for I have two personal assistants. Well, so that really helps a lot. And as far as the agent goes, I mean, the agent's out there, you know, trying to rack up a deal with a publisher for you. Mm-hmm. And so I haven't come across someone who's going to want to represent me, maybe at some point, mm-hmm. but right now it's me
mm-hmm. yeah.
and my assistant. Yeah. So
how nice to have an assistant. When I saw that you had one, I told my husband, I need a personal assistant too. And he laughed. And he said, someday you will have one.
I know.
I know.
Absolutely. And I couldn't live without these two gals that are amazing, talented women. And one's in the design for my website. The other, she does all my social media, because half of it I don't quite understand or get. Like,
what I meant,
Instagram. I'm not
fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah. So if you need a referral, I'll be happy to refer you.
Well, my youngest daughter is in that age bracket. And the minute she heard that, she's like, why don't you hire me? And I'm like, yeah, why don't I?
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, seriously, that's a great suggestion. Yeah, because kids or, you know, younger folks these days are so technology evolved.
They really are. They do. So,
yeah.
So the aspect also that really comes up, regardless if an author is traditionally published or anything else, I do find, and you already touched on this, the marketing. Authors absolutely need to be marketing themselves. So what are kind of some of the techniques and tips that you have been doing for marketing? I pick your brain because I always pick up something new almost every time, or, you know, we can share with others kind of some tips.
So basically what I did was, I don't know if you know who Helen Fielding is. She wrote Bridget Jones' Diary.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And that whole diary came about because she wrote a column in the, I believe it was the Independent in the UK. And so I don't know if it was every week, she'd be, you know, she'd write her little serial about Bridget, and then mm-hmm. one thing led to another.
Yeah.
So she had a circulation going, and then it turned into a book, and then it turned into a movie. So I kind of take the same approach. I do some short stories, and then I release. So I do it. My PA does a teaser through the week of mm-hmm. the upcoming short story, and on Friday she publishes the short stories. Because I think it's important, if people are going to invest money in your book, they want to see what you're writing,
exactly.
how you write,
mm-hmm.
and the content you write. So I seem to be somewhat successful releasing short stories doing that. So people are familiar with my writing,
mm-hmm.
and they get to know, you know, me a little bit, and, you know, what I have to offer as far as an author goes.
Mm-hmm. That's a great plan. I'm kind of going the route right now of blogging. I'm going to start, there's a new, not new, but it's A to Z challenge for April. So depending on when people hear this, this might have already started. and it's a challenge for bloggers to blog every day of April, except for Sundays. And one of my other author friends told me about it. I'm like, oh, that's such a great way to really inspire yourself to do some blogging, but also to get some of your writing out there. And so I've been working on that. So great idea. Another thing that I've been looking at, and is kind of the manifestation of this podcast really for me, is a support group of writers and getting in a network of some sort. Did you have your own support group, and were you part of a writing group or professional organizations as you started, or were you completely solo?
Well, I did try that. I did try an online circle that... it was really a negative experience for me, because they didn't want to critique you. They wanted to criticize you. There's a big difference to me, and they would criticize what I was, my research and time mm-hmm. frames. And it just got to be very, I was disheartened by it, and I just mm-hmm. felt like I wanted to give up, but I didn't. Mm-hmm. And so I just decided I needed to believe in myself. I think mm-hmm. that's the key, because no one's going to be your best cheerleader except for you.
I agree with that 100%. It's so true. So I'm sorry that was a negative experience. And maybe someday in the path, you'll be surrounded by others that are supportive enough to give you the honest feedback that you need.
Yes. Right? Yes. No, I do have a support group. I do have some author friends that mm-hmm. are great support, and I seem to attract more people. You know, I'm starting to mentor people now, which is amazing. One of my beta readers, she's actually doing writing and posting on fanfic. So I am trying to be a mentor the way I wish someone would have been for me. I don't want to be this critical person, and I want to encourage, not discourage.
That's awesome. That's kind of where my story is too, I'm in higher education for my day job, and I'm a mentor for a university for other students that are, working on their bachelor's. And so I gravitate towards that kind of aspect of wanting to help other people. I get so much benefit from it. And so I think support groups are great, but you really do have to be careful who you're listening to. So, because we're already self-critical, I think. And so if we have people feed that, we don't need them to feed that if we're going to believe in what we're doing.
I think I have a team of between 11 and 12 beta readers.
Oh, that's
awesome. I mean, these ladies devote their entire time, and some of them have been with me for 4 or 5 years now. And it's amazing that they are so supportive, and, you know, they tell me when things need to be fixed, and that's great. That's what I want them there for. But at the same time, it's such a cohesive and supportive group. It makes me want to be a better writer.
That's
overall.
Fantastic. That you're very fortunate to have good readers as for feedback. I mean, I believe that a lot of people make the mistake of maybe having only their family members read for them. And our family members are going to tell us it's great. They're not going to give us the kind of feedback that we may need, right? So one thing I've heard a lot of people do is they hire editors, like they actually hire an editor. And I'm kind of playing around with that idea. Have you done that in the past, or you relied on your readers?
I did. And then I came to the conclusion that there's different editors out there. Mm-hmm. And I didn't realize this. My manuscripts are pretty clean most of the time, but I've kind of gone from the editor version to a proofreader.
Gotcha.
That's really where I need someone to really have to do. But, you know, the beauty of actually self-publishing is that you can always update your manuscript and upload it. And if you find something that isn't right, and I have found things because we're all human, we all miss things. So I just fix them, correct them, and move on.
Yep. Fantastic. Awesome. Awesome insights. So Trish, tell me what keeps you going as an author, and what's your inspiration?
My goal is to be a New York Times bestseller, Amazon bestseller, and USA Today bestseller. Fantastic. That is my inspiration. That's my focus. And what inspires me most is when I'm able to submit a chapter to my beta readers and they love it. Mm-hmm. And that is such a great high that you know you're in the right space of the story and moving it forward and, you know, propelling it into this great book. So those are my inspirations.
Awesome. Well, they're great inspirations. And I will be cheering you on all the way. Yay.
Thank you, Vicki. I appreciate that.
Yeah. So for a couple final thoughts before we move into your reading, so I'm very excited to hear your reading. What would you like the listeners for the podcast and your future readers to know about you and your future work?
Well, right now I just finished up the third in the series of the Granite Bay series, Staying Accidentally in Love. So that's in proof right now. So that's coming out hopefully the end of this month. And then the next thing I'm working on simultaneously is my hockey romance book, which I just have fallen in love with these characters and the storyline. And because I love hockey and I've read some great hockey romance novels. Mm-hmm. I thought, oh, this would be so much fun to do. So I'm kind of basing it on the San Jose Sharks, who are my team, go Sharks, and one of the players. And so it's been really so much fun. And then later on in the summer, I'm going to be consulting with a lady, a friend of mine, who is into Celtic magic and Striget, which is Italian magic. So we're gonna be doing a series of Celtic magic books.
And interesting.
Yes, it's gonna be really a fun read. So I'm very looking forward to that one.
Very cool. Good. Okay, so now is the time for listeners. I know you guys have been waiting to hear Trisha's reading. I always make everybody wait because I like to ask all these questions first. So why don't you set the stage for what you're going to read for us and share kind of what you can about briefly the situation, the setting, the characters, the background, so that we can settle in and really picture what's going on when you read.
Sure. This Accidentally in Love has to do with, it revolves around the town of Granite Bay here in Oregon, but it's actually based out of California, so a place where I lived. Mm-hmm. So I just brought the town up here, but it's based on the town I live in, and so I always write local. So it's based about a group of friends. One of them comes to town. He's a new guy. He's a really handsome veterinarian, equine vet. Mm-hmm. So he takes care of horses. And then the other character is Kenda. She, Noah is the vet. And then Kenda is the lady who runs the horse sanctuary. So it's kind of a match made in heaven, but their paths cross from the past. So everything kind of culminates together and comes full circle. So they're both not, they don't want any relationships because they've both been in bad relationships. And it turns out the relationships have to do with their exes that they knew in a prior town. So it all culminates in the town of Granite Bay.
Okay. Well, we'll let you go ahead and start reading.
Okay. This is the prologue. It's Noah from 5 years ago. Today is one of the most pivotal moments in my life and as a UC Davis Aggie. It's my last day leading my team down the field with the opportunity to win the Big Sky Conference championship game. We lead the conference with 10-1 record. I look over at the sideline to see the signal from my offensive coordinator pacing back and forth, gesturing wildly as he talks into his headset to the coaches in the booth. It is a 3rd and 10 in the fourth quarter with less than 30 seconds on the clock. My heart is racing as I call an audible after reading the defense at the line of scrimmage. They're showing signs of an all-out blitz. I change the play from a run to a screen pass, which should work beautifully against the defense's pressure. I take the snap from the center, dropping back, and look to my right and pump fake to pull the defense away from the screen. The defense and offense square off, and I can hear the sounds of grunts and groans of sheer manpower reverberating as helmets and bodies collide. I feel the defensive line and the linebackers bearing down on me as I slowly drift away and drop the ball over their extended heads. Out of the corner of my eye, I see my running back, Dahl, number 23, wide open. The crowd in Aggie Stadium is going wild as I drop past to him near the 25-yard line. Ricky jumps up and makes a perfect catch as we've always done 1,000 times during practice. He accelerates along the sideline, outrunning a 300-pound defensive lineman hot on his tail. Dahl cuts right to his left to avoid a tackle and runs smoothly into the end zone. I raise my arms in victory after the touchdown. My coach calls a timeout, and the ref blows the whistle, stopping the clock at 16 seconds. Our kicker, Diaz, and placeholder, Frankel, come onto the field, and as we pass each other, I give them each a high five and head over to the sideline. I pull off my helmet and reach for a towel and a Gatorade. I mop the sweat off my face and chug down my Gatorade. I watch our special teams break the huddle and go to the line. They pause, set up, and execute a perfect snap to Frankel. The defensive line for Sacramento State rush the kicker, but Diaz gets the ball in flight and through the uprights, scoring the extra point to win the game. The excitement in Aggie Stadium erupts into a deafening roar of people cheering, yelling, and surging into the field. I watch my teammates celebrating their triumph. In the middle of the chaos, I look up into the stands and search for her, Charlie. Her face is flushed with excitement, smiling and waving at me. I run over to the bleachers near the railing as she comes down to greet me. I reach up and pull her over to the side and into my arms. I swing her around in sheer elation. Her long black hair swirls around us like a veil. I set her down gently as her body slides along mine. I hold Charlie flush against me as a camera flash goes off and my lips slide over hers. We're lost in the moment from the win and the surprise I've planned for the last 2 months. As we come up for breath, I look into her dark chocolate eyes and smile. Hi. I kiss her again. I try to alleviate the nervousness, but I can't shake it. Hi back, Charlie grinned back at me. When Charlie smiles at me, I feel like the luckiest guy in the world. And right now, I want to make her the happiest girl and make her mine forever with our families, teammates, and our fans as our witness. I glance over to Patrick, giving him the signal, who's rigged with an earpiece and informs the broadcast booth to begin the announcement. The sportscaster, Sharm Wilson's voice, comes over the stadium PA speaker. Ladies and gentlemen, may I have your attention, please? Turn toward the bleachers for a significant occasion. People curious about the announcement face the bleachers, filled with my teammates, including Charlie and me. I interlace my hands with her as we anxiously wait for the surprise. A few select team members are each standing holding a stunt card. I give a nod to Patrick, who gestures to them to flip the card. I'm watching my Aggies in bold red letters, Charlie, will you marry me? I kneel down before Charlie and present her with a black velvet box. I open it up to reveal a 2-carat princess cut diamond. Charlie, shocked, places her hand over her mouth and is surprised with tears glistening her eyes. Sweetheart, I love you with my entire heart and soul. Will you do me the honor of becoming my wife? That's the prologue. Chapter 1, Kenda, present day. I look over at Lori and Bella gossiping about the new veterinarian who blew into town just a few days ago. The way the two are going on about him, you'd think he was David Beckham or George Clooney who settled into Granite Bay instead of a hot veterinarian with an Aussie accent. Big deal. I try to focus on the paper, but the chatter threw me off my concentration. For two mature women, they are acting like a couple of teenagers with a huge crush on a rock star. I just wanted to sip my skinny latte in peace. Bella Brews is the hub of the town, which included coffee, gossip, and the most decadent muffins. Bella made the best Marion Berry muffins in the state. Not too light, not too dense. And of course, Bella reigned as the queen of knowing everyone's business. Today's hot topic is Mr. Hot DVM. Luckily for me, I prefer the quiet life away from prying eyes in the gossip mill. I come to town once a week to shop and sit in the cafe to enjoy my one luxury, a tall latte. I am completely ignored in favor of the mysterious stranger. Wanda, after the AM PM, told me he had the most gorgeous smile. Bella put her hand over her heart in a grand gesture as she was accepting an award. The red-haired, full-busted owner of the cafe with dark blue eyeshadow and thick eyeliner missed her calling as an actress. Her bright pink uniform clashed with her bright red lipstick. I rolled my eyes. Mr. Hot DMV already has groupies. Lucky him. Half the women in town are over 60. I wonder if he knew how his presence affected our little town. Whoever he is was in for a big surprise. I can't wait to see him and take an up-close and personal look-see for myself, Lori exclaimed. He claimed another victim. They're falling like dominoes. Lori, the local librarian, probably on her lunch hour, snorted like one of my horses. Oh my God, if that didn't scare off Mr. Hot DMV, nothing would. The myopic woman was your garden variety cat lady who lived in an old Victorian on Pine Street. I suspected she hadn't changed her wardrobe since the 1970s. All flowery and below the knee and sensible shoes she bought yearly from the Sears in Dallas. She wore the same hairdo up and twisted, giving her face a pinched, thin look, and wore no makeup. Did I mention Lori is a Sunday school teacher at the local Baptist church? One of the more upstanding citizens of Granite Bay. Their conversation escalated into an all-out frenzy, loud and noisy, so I couldn't help but overhear every single word they said. I was merely a fixture of the 50s retro diner. Black and white floors, red naugahyde booths, paraphernalia on the wall, and an old jukebox that played music from the era. His name is Noah Benedict, Bella said in a loud whisper. Noah Benedict? Why did that name ring a bell? I could have sworn I heard that name before. My brain was too fuzzy from the lack of sleep after I stayed up late with a colicky horse. My prized Australian warm blood buttercup came down with a mild case of colic. I knew the minute she pawed at the ground and curled her lips, she was in distress. I took her temperature, which showed normal, then walked her around a bit. By the time I'd left the ranch, she had eaten some oats and drank water. It was such a relief I didn't have to call the vet. I left her in the care of Trace, my trusted barn manager. Another customer came in. Mrs. Cormack sat down at the counter to be filled in on Granite Bay's newest resident, no doubt, who needed a smartphone when Norma could spread the news faster than a speeding bullet. Bella, just the usual. Bella nodded and set a cup of black coffee in front of Norma Cormack. She took a sip and says the same thing every time. Bella, Mr. Cormack never knew what he missed. If he didn't know better, you would assume Mr. Cormack was dead. Unfortunately for Norma, he left her for a dyed blonde who lived the next county over. They were all scandalized until Norma told them she was glad Tom moved on. As she put it, he stopped putting out. God, what an image got seared in my brain. Like thinking about my parents having sex. Just ooh, too much information. Mrs. Cormack joined in the conversation about Mr. Hot DMV. Her thin lips formed an O, gripped with the latest about the hot vet. Her eyes looked twice as thick with her thick glasses as she listened to Bella go on and on. Norma looked around as if she didn't want anyone to hear what she was about to say, but with her booming voice, that wasn't a possibility in a small cafe. I hear there is a scandal around him. Their voices lowered when Norma put her two cents in. I couldn't make out what they were saying. Geez, what the hell was I doing? Eavesdropping wasn't any better than gossiping. I got the rest of my latte, which turned cold. Is that what happens to people who live in a small town? Grow old, gossip, and die? Just thinking about it made me depressed. I tried to convince myself my perfect orderly life suited me well. Even I didn't believe that shit. The little bell on the door tinkled again, signaling another patron. I had a clear view of the door from my corner booth. Ty came in and waved at me. She said hello to the ladies and ordered a sandwich to go. She came over and slid into the seat opposite of me. How's Buttercup? She's better, thanks. I could see the relief in her intense blue eyes. Ty understood how much my 15-year-old horse means to me since she was like my overly large kid. Not only is Ty Montgomery my best friend, she also works as my vet, as a vet tech. She's my go-to gal for everything, my problem, my animals, my everything. So not to change the subject or anything, how is Devin? I wink while she blushes. so I know things are going well. Devin Wallace is a tall drink of water. His lean, lanky body advertises those Wranglers in a way that makes sinners out of saints. When those dark hazel green eyes of his landed on you, you are a goner. Ask any female within a 20-mile radius between the ages of 5 and 95. When mentioned of Devin, and they all melt like chocolate. How she landed a dedicated bachelor is a mystery even to me. How are you doing that thing again? What thing? I snapped to attention. She caught me daydreaming again. How does she do that? You know exactly what I'm talking about. I was wondering how you landed Devin. I mean, you never mentioned how you two got together. It's a real mystery that has confounded a lot of women around here, including me. And since I'm your best friend, I at least deserve an explanation. But I crossed my heart not to tell, so help me God. And why are you wearing a scarf? It's nearly 80 degrees outside. I reach across and pull the scarf off and see the evidence Ty is trying to hide. A massive hickey. A wide grin confirms her worst fear. Ty is getting some action. But how much is another story? Ty rolls her eyes at me. Even her scrub, she's adorable. Petite, blonde, and feisty as hell. Devin, with his dark good looks, contrasts Ty's blonde beauty. They made a cute couple. But I feel a pang of temporary jealousy, too. But why? I've sworn off men forever. After the disastrous breakup with Dylan Roth, or as I call him, Dylan the Villain, serial cheater extraordinaire. Any mention of Dylan makes my blood boil. Thank God I moved away from him and his harem. What is it with cheating men, anyway? You promise never to repeat this to anyone living or dead? And she smiled impishly. I promise. Our moms got us together. What? I shake my head because I do not hear Ty correctly. They're mothers. Is this some kind of arranged marriage deal? I don't understand, like a blind date? Ty knows Devin through her vet practice since he's one of their high-profile clients with a large cattle ranch and a damn fine lawyer in Salem. But the hint of any romance between them seemed a little far-fetched. After all, didn't at least three women try to rope that cowboy and attempted to get him down the aisle? Devin always managed to slip away unscathed. The same couldn't be said of Casey, Charla, and Effie. A line of shattered hearts I didn't want to see Ty end up as one of the Deb's cast-offs. Ty deserves so much better. Kind of, like a blind date. We've known each other forever, but ran in different circles. Ty blushes again. Something is up. Ty never blushes over any man, or so I thought. She's an alpha female and is never afraid to show her claws when needed. Her male-dominant profession, she needs a tough exterior. It's a matter of pride in growing and proving herself. From my vantage point, she's kicking ass in that arena. Spill it. My folks had Devin over for a barbecue. That's it? Yep, that's it, she confirmed. Wait a minute, you didn't look me in the eye. What else happened? Maybe one thing led to another and involved a bottle of Jack Daniels, the barn loft, and listening to Rascal Flatts. It was so romantic, Kendra, she sighed. She's clearly smitten with Devin, maybe even love. Ty looked down at her hands, folded in her lap, clearly uncomfortable with my line of questioning. I put two and two together. They did it on the first date. Oh, my God. You had sex with Devin Wallace, didn't you? It was more of an accusation than a statement. I had to admit I'm a bit envious, too. My lady parts were in the middle of a drought. Shush. Keep your voice down. Do you want the whole town to know? I think they already do. I look over and see three pairs of eyes staring our way. I mouth sorry to Ty, who seems ready to kill me on the spot. Shit. I am very protective. My overprotective father hears about this. I'm grounded for life. You're 30 years old, for Pete's sake. No longer live at home. What possibly could happen? Nothing short of a shotgun wedding in these parts. Men did not mess with ranchers' daughters, including the eligible Dove and Wallace, unless they were a church service and a preacher involved. I'm dead, Ty slunk down in the booth. Your sandwich is ready to go, Ty. Bella smirked with a knowing smile like the old buffalo she is. Her menu should read, her specialty is a side of gossip. Forget about the MV. Noah Benedict is old news. Welcome to Devin Wallace and Ty Montgomery. I wouldn't be surprised if there weren't a prenup signed within 24 hours of the news broadcast. While I try to talk down Ty from her emotional ledge, I look up and lock eyes with the man who has the bluest eyes I've ever seen. Where did he come from? He just appeared out of nowhere like David Copperfield. I can't seem to tear my gaze away from him like those slow down at an accident scene. You don't want to look, but some morbid curiosity wins out. My stomach flutters, as does my pulse. Time stands still. All those sappy cliches happen in this one moment. He gives me a half smile and a wave like he knows me. I wave back in response. Every movement I make is purely animatronic, like a Stepford wife. He crooks his finger at me in a playful way. I momentarily break the magical spell he's woven over me. I raise my eyebrow at him and return the challenge. By this time, I have regained my wits about me as he flashes a beautiful smile and makes me come all unglued again. Is this guy for real? I know deep down who he is, but the real is he acts like he knows me. I would remember him. His dark blonde hair is a little messy in a sexy way. With a smile that lights up his whole face, not to mention my body heat. Noah's exquisite to look at. His attire is a plain white t-shirt, jeans, and black Doc Martens. A swimmer's body, I think to myself. Muscled, ripped, and powerful. Noah Benedict looked like he just stepped out of a Calvin Klein commercial. By this time, Ty stops in mid-sentence about her compromised romance with Devin and follows my line of vision. Oh, that's the new vet, Noah Benedict, she says nonchalantly. She waves back at him. I told him to meet me here. I've got to go and show Noah around the clinic. I'll call you later. Ty is on a first-name basis with him? Holy shit. Then it dawns on me. He was waving at Ty, not me. I watch as Ty approaches Noah and they exchange a few words. He leans in and whispers a few words in Ty's ears. She laughs at whatever he said, apparently at my expense. As they head out the door, Noah turns and winks and flashes those pearly whites at me again. God, I wonder what it'd be like to have him whisper in my ear like he did Ty's. A thousand fantasies erupt in my mind while the old buffaloes watch the entire incident. Maybe Mr. Hot DMV is back in the gossip fold. When the bell on the door rings again after their departure, I think an angel has gotten its wings. But for some reason, I speculate Noah Benedict likes to dance with the devil because I could have sworn I saw his horns.
Awesome. I know that small town well. And that coffee shop.
Yeah, I know.
Perfect. Lovely. And I think our readers really appreciated it. So I'm going to sign off. So thank you so much, Trisha, for being here. If you guys loved her
reading,
go find her and get her books, write a review for her. And thanks so much for being here. And we'll have you again when you do some other stuff.
Yes. Thank you very much, Vicki.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. We hoped you loved hearing from the author as much as we did. If you did enjoy the author, make sure you find them on social media. Buy their book and write a review. Are you a published author and would like to be featured on the podcast? Visit us at our website to learn more. You can help support the production of this podcast by following us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Share the podcast with your friends. And most importantly, become a supporter. Supporters receive monthly bonus podcasts and a newsletter filled with tips from our authors. To find out more how to become a supporter, visit our website. And finally, I hope you always remember to enjoy the journey. Until next week, this is Vicki J. Carter saying goodbye.